We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to the first chapter, the 12th Mishnah. Hillel v'Shamai kibelu mehem. Hillel and Shammai, they received their tradition from Shmaya and Avtalion. So we know Shmaya and Avtalion were Geir Tzedek, descendants of Sanherib. And Hillel and Shammai, Hillel was the Nasi 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. And Hillel was a descendant of King David through a daughter. And Hillel was tremendously modest. And Hillel went out to Babylon to learn under Shmaya Naftalion. That's why there are places in the Talmud that Hillel is referred to as Hillel HaBavli, Hillel the Babylonian. There was a later Hillel who established our calendar called Hillel Nisia, to discern between this Hillel and the later Hillel. And there was an Amora named Rebbe Hillel. Hillel is a name that appears in Tanakh already, in Shoftim. So Hillel and Shammai, they were great sages. And we say, Godol Miraban Shmo. You have levels in the levels of sages. You have Rebbe, you have Rav, Rebbe, Rabban, which is the Nasi. And then even bigger than Rabban is when he's known by his name. If you say Hillel, and everyone knows which Hillel you're talking about, that's pretty big. So we say, Gadol Miraban Shmo, even bigger than saying him, Rabbi, Rabban, so-and-so, is when you say by name, that's like Hillel and Shammai. So Hillel and Shammai are famous. We have to be careful not to confuse Hillel and Shammai with Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Hillel and Shammai only differed on 3 points in Shas. There's a fourth point which wasn't really their own argument, but technically they had only 3 machloksin in all of Shas. It was their disciples, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that had many machlokot. Hillel and Shammai, they were the leaders of the Jewish people. Hillel was the Nasi, Shammai was the Av Betin. Hillel Omer. Hillel says the following, very famous quote. Hillel says, Hevei mitalmidav shel Aaron. A person should be among the disciples of Aaron. What was Aaron like? What was Aaron the Kohen, the high priest? What was he like? Ohev shalom. He loved peace. Virodev shalom. And he chased after peace. Ohev et abiriyot. He loved the creatures, God's creations, looking at them and recognizing that they are a creation of God, seeing godliness within them, not because I derive benefit from them, but because they are something worthwhile that God created. Umkarevan la Torah, and bring them close to Torah. So Hillel told us, the first teaching we have from Hillel is that we should be a disciple of Aaron. Hillel could have said the same Mishnah without that introduction. He could have just said, do this, but he didn't say that. He said, be among the disciples of Aaron. Sometimes in life, we have to define who we are. A person can say, I'm a disciple of Machon Meir. Does he feel that obligates him? Sometimes not. He says, if you'd see my roommate, he desecrated Shabbos. You'd see my other roommate, he's out there without a yarmulke nowadays. I'm a tzaddik. So if you don't feel that obligates you, it's not good enough. Hillel tells us, consider yourself one of Aaron's disciples. A person has to choose a way in life sometimes. It always bothered me when I'd go to the Kotel on Sukkot and offer my lulav and esrog to the soldiers. They'd ask me, are you Chabadnik? I love Chabad. No issue with Chabad. It bothered me that Chabad is known as the ones that offer their lulav and esrog to soldiers. Only Chabad. We're not all Jews. We're not all supposed to offer that to soldiers. That's what the world's come to. But then it dawned on me that, you know, maybe I should say I'm a Chabadnik. Maybe. If Chabadniks feel like they have to, and everyone else feels like they don't, so then maybe I should be a Chabadnik, because I feel like I have to. People sometimes say, I want to take off my yarmulke, because, you know, I might cut in line, I might speed. So don't cut in line, don't speed, right? Keep the yarmulke on. If that's going to keep you in line, so do what's right. And sometimes it's the idea that a person says, I'm a student of. Chazal said, it's good to live next to your Rebbe, because you're not going to misbehave. You're not going to walk around in shorts maybe Shabbos afternoon if you know your Rebbe, you might bump into your Rebbe. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe, yeah. But Chazal say, even Shlomo HaMelech, who ultimately killed his Rebbe, he executed him as Morid B'Malchus, as we will learn Bezrat Hashem in a few weeks. But so long as his Rebbe was alive, Shlomo behaved differently. He didn't marry the woman he shouldn't have married. So you see, he had respect for his Rebbe. When we define ourselves, sometimes that affects how we behave. So Hillel says, first point, before he gives us the message, Heveni Talmidav Shel Aharon. Define yourself as a disciple of Aaron. People sometimes make their screensavers a picture of their Rebbe. If that'll keep you from doing improper things on the computer, so do that. A person has to sometimes define himself. And very often the way we define ourselves defines how we behave. One of the worst things a parent can do is tell a child, you're bad. Because then the child will live up to it. You tell to him often enough, he'll say, okay, that's fine. Let me see. How do I live up to it? You define for a child who he is. I remember vividly seeing a kid who couldn't... I saw this as a kid. Everything he did, his actions were very coarse. His fine motor skills weren't too good. And I remember like trying to keep my siblings away from him because like he was capable of knocking them in the face as he's turning around. He's like wasn't very careful about anything he did. And then I was there when his mother said to another parent, yeah, this kid is so good with children. He is so careful, he's so good with kids. And I could see him beaming, and then he had something to live up to. Now his mother said he's good with kids. Now every time he'd bump into other people's kids, he'd pick them up and say they're so cute, and he'd be so gentle because his mother said all the positive about him. One of the big mistakes that people make in marriage is that they define things the wrong way. We've often discussed not giving criticism. And guys often say, well, how do you? You know, sometimes you have to. So after discussing many times that you never should, and that there's almost never a time that you should, if at the end of the day you see that you, for whatever reason, you should say something, so the best type of criticism is positive. If the one time you come home and you see it good, you strengthen the good, that's the best. Sometimes you see that that's not going to work. So what do? So you choose a time when you're closest together. You choose a scene where everything's warm and close. And then you bring it up like something that once happened. You don't say, you know, last night you told me that you did the shopping. You didn't. I know you figured you'd get it in this morning, but you said you did it. And the day before that, you said you didn't charge anything to the credit card, and then I see you did. And you told me that you turned off them when you left the house. You left it on. And you start giving this whole list of, you know, we got to work on truth. You do that, the answer you're going to get is, you're right, I'm a liar. You just proved it. You're stuck. You married a liar. Believe me. Like 1 + 1 = 2, that's the answer you're going to get. So if you want to get somewhere, you have to choose one example. And choose that example like it just happened. And maybe we have to discuss it. And again, not on the moment. You never respond on the moment because then a person is defensive. You choose a moment which is not relevant. And you choose a moment when we're close, not when everything's all fireworks. And not only that, but no, you choose a moment when, I'll get to you in a minute, David, you choose when everything's close, and then you mention it like it happened once, like a one-time occurrence. And then you got to come with a lot of positive. You know, you're great, and A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you want to build a positive self-image. If you're going to come and bash the person and show them how they've done this numerous times, you've framed the person, you've defined them as a person who does this. Okay, you've defined it. They're going to live up to that definition. You have to frame it the opposite. You have to show their strengths, and you have to come with many, many possible solutions how they could work on it. And then it's ideal that you decide you're going to work on something too. Because all too often we have expectations from our spouse and we can't live up to anything close to what we expect of them. So a good way to remember that is that we both agree we'll work on something at the same time. You know, you've been bugging me for ages that I should be ready for Shabbos 45 minutes before Shabbos, that I shouldn't be rushing in last minute. So while you work on that, I'll work on being ready for Shabbos. And then when you see that week after week you don't live up to your end of the deal, you'll have a little bit more patience when she doesn't live up to her end of the deal, because the nature of the human being is that it's very hard to change. And the last point is, once we see a little bit of improvement, you got to give a lot of compliments. The nature of marriage is that you look at the other person like they're crazy. And there's no reason whatsoever to compliment, because, you know, what am I complimenting? That she's just not lying to me, right? I mean, she's a decent human being now. So now I'm supposed to compliment that? The answer is, if this is what she has to work on, then for her, this is something that's very hard. And now you can't work with this theoretical framework, you know. Decent people do this, she doesn't. She should work into entering this framework of decent people, and then everything will be alright. That doesn't work. But believe it or not, that's the way most people work. That's the way wives work, that's the way husbands work. And it doesn't work. And so we have to give many compliments when we see improvement. But step number one, which is where we got to from our Mishnah, is framing the person as a positive person, not as a negative person. And all too often, people are very, very powerful in their framing the other party as problematic. And they have good reason. They'll enumerate all the reasons why they feel that way. But they've already lost the battle because they've already framed the person. Yes, sir?
Doesn't that just ruin all the nice moments?
If you're going to spend all your nice moments doing that, yes, then it will.
Isn't that like, even if you do it, if you do it twice in 7 years, isn't that like for the next 7 years she's going to be worried about having nice moments? She's going to get rad.
I think it's depends on the intelligence with which one does it. Meaning, if she feels like you set it up just so that you could get this point across.
And most of us don't have the intelligence that women would like us to. Wouldn't that just have something like, wouldn't that make the woman feel like the other shoe is going to drop like any moment for the rest of her life?
I don't think so, because you're supposed to have so many other positive moments, and hopefully, if this was done in a positive moment, and with all these rules, then she won't walk away from this conversation hurt. Quite the contrary, you'll actually make some headway. Meaning, you're imagining it's going to end up with fireworks, and I'm trying to explain how it should end up. Yeah, I mean like explosions. And I'm trying to say how it can end up being a positive conversation with actual products. Hillel says we have to be ohev shalom, to love the peace. And you'd be surprised how hard that is. Very often, the picture that people enter marriage with is their parents' marriage. And in today's day and age, a lot of people, their relationship is all about making cracks at one another's expense and constantly making these slight jabs. And those slight jabs add up. But some people don't know how to connect with you any other way. It's like, I remember I had an instructor, I'd walk into class, and he'd say, "Frankenthal, I hate your guts." Okay? That was the way class started, and that was his way of showing affection. You know, in hindsight, I feel bad for that person. I hope he didn't do that to his wife. But there are a lot of people that way. They don't know how to say something positive. We have to love peace. It's an attitude. Sometimes it's not an easy attitude. And when a person sees that that's not his attitude, he has to know that the problem starts within. A person can walk home all riled up, and then he knows that there's going to be, it's going to be happening night. Things are going to explode, and he has to realize that he's entered and he's all charged. All too often we forecast our own moods onto others. And the person has to stop and ask himself, wait a second, am I ohev shalom? Am I in a state that I love peace? Or do I want something else? Now, sometimes this stems from a person's frustrations with themselves. Very often what people do in marriage is they have their own frustrations. And then a person will say something to the effect of, I'm no good, I'm never on time. And basically what they want to happen in their subconscious is that their spouse should say, yeah, you're right, you really are never on time. And then they'll get upset at their spouse. And then the spouse says, wait a second, but you just said that. Yeah, and then the response is going to be, yeah, but you weren't supposed to agree. And then the spouse says, what, is this a game? But the truth is that subconsciously, very often, it's much easier to get upset at someone else. And what people do is they take their own frustrations, project them outwardly, and then it's much easier to get upset at someone else who's blaming me for my frustrations with myself than to get upset at myself. That's much easier. And that's a recurring theme in many marriages, but people have to be attuned to it. Ohev shalom, to love peace. Virodev shalom, and to chase after peace. How do you chase after peace? So, if you want to imagine what most spousal arguments are like, imagine 2-3-year-olds arguing. He started first, no, he started first. He started first, no, he started first. Sometimes you could sit in a psychologist's office and you think you're looking at little children. And you'd be surprised how much it boils down to that and how many times couples can have a conversation. Wait a second. Who started this? Well, you said this. No, but you said that. But you said this. But you said that. But I didn't mean that. Wait a second. What's going on here? What's going on here is a question of who's right. And it's not a question of who's going to put peace into the house. Hillel taught us we have to be rodef shalom, to chase after peace. Which means sometimes saying I'm sorry, even though you don't think you're in the wrong. And that's something that's very hard for a guy to do. You know, but I don't think I'm wrong. Why should I say I'm sorry? No? Doesn't it like resonate with all of you? But if you're rodef shalom, if you're chasing after the peace, then who's right is less important. Sometimes a guy will say, but why should I always be the one giving in? Okay, maybe you shouldn't always be the one giving in. But if you're giving in 95% of the time, so 95% of the time, you're the one that's making the marriage work. Okay. But shouldn't it be 50-50? Maybe. Maybe not. We have to try and find a balance that works for us, but we have to walk in with an attitude that I want peace. And if peace is very important to me, if peace is more important to me than who's right, then I will chase after that peace. Here in the state of Israel, we've gone to crazy extremes with that. You know, you could shoot missiles at me, but let's call it peace. We'll have all these guards protecting the peace. Every little schoolyard needs to have a guard because we have to keep this peace. That's not peace. You know, when we have to protect our children, when you can't have even a playground without a... You know, you can't have 3-year-olds playing in a playgroup without a guard. That's not peace. So that's not what we're talking about. But we are definitely talking about ridiculous compromises in order to make it work. It's not about who's right as much as how can we make this work. And that's an attitude. Rodef shalom, to chase after the peace. It requires chasing. Because the nature of marriage is that it won't work. Isn't that a radical statement? The nature of marriage is that a man and a woman under one roof are going to get on one another's nerves. Chazal tell us that peace is a gift from God. That things left to their own nature have war. Mm-hmm. We say it in davening every day. So the nature of two people under one roof who have to live with one another day in and day out, and they come from different backgrounds, and he's male and she's female, so if left to nature, then they're going to drive one another crazy. It's just a question of who's going to get on whose nerves more. And so in the caveman's time, he'd pick up his club and say, quiet. You know, okay. So in Chazal's time, Chazal said that the people who weren't learned would beat their wives. In the Puritans' times, if a woman spoke too much, they'd have a public punishment where husband could bring his wife to a public place and they'd put her in a stock with her head and her hands, and then they'd take her tongue out and they had a special clamp and she'd have her tongue out in public till she learned that she spoke too much to her husband. What? This was Puritans in the United States, the Plymouth Rock, those who settled the... So this was, you know, the husbands, they ran the world, right? A woman couldn't own land. She couldn't sue her husband. She was her husband's property. So up until about 200 years ago, anywhere but in educated Judaism, a woman was her husband's property. In Judaism, that was not the case. You know, The rabbi said, don't marry your daughter off to a man who's not learned, because he might beat her. It's not right, but they're not listening to us. So Chazal said, if you learn Torah, you know you're not allowed to beat your wife. What are you doing? That's why Chazal said, don't go to a wedding of a man who's marrying off his daughter to an Amoritz. How could you celebrate that? Who knows what he's going to do to the poor girl, and no one can interfere. Chazal had a discussion, how could you eat at such a thing? Because what are you rejoicing? You're rejoicing that the girl is being bound to a man. Chazal said it's like tying her up to a lion. If this is the way they're treating their wives, Chazal were very strict against that. But we have to understand the backdrop to what Chazal were saying. Chazal were concerned for the women. Chazal made many institutions to protect the women. And Chazal tell us some fantastic stories. Chazal say even in the time the Jews were in the desert, a man got upset at his wife. He said, I swear, he took a biblical vow and said, you're not going to enjoy anything in my house. You're not going to touch a thing or enjoy a thing until you go to Aaron HaKohen and spit in his eye. So now this is a story that Talmud records. So now what was the woman supposed to do? Go to the Kohen Gadol, high priest, and spit in his eye? So Aaron heard about this, and he heard that the poor woman is standing outside the house. She doesn't know what to do with herself. So Aaron went next to the house, and he said, lady, I got something in my eye. I need someone to clear it. Could you just spit a little bit and get it out? And the woman would come and spit, and her husband would see. And she'd say, look, I did what you said, right? So the Talmud records a story that there were two people who got married, and they spoke different dialects. And he told her to take the dish and put it above. And Bava in his dialect meant the windowsill. And she thought he meant the chief rabbi, Bava ben Buta. So she's taking the dish, and she walks into the academy and says, rabbi, I'm very sorry. And she walks over and puts it on his head. He's like, okay, why are you doing this? The woman says, my husband told me to. What was she supposed to do? So he said to her, Ishak Shirat, you're a kosher woman. This is what you thought your husband wanted you to do. Okay, good for you. You go home and tell your husband he did what he wanted. But that's Rodef Shalom. You got to chase the peace. It's not simple. In Chazal's time, they taught us we're supposed to treat our wives not as our own objects. And that's why Chazal say that wives also had some fantastic answers. Wives who knew that they didn't have to worry their husband was going to beat them. Well, if they, in that case, they have what to say. And Chazal wanted a relationship where the wife would have what to say, just like Eve had what to say to Adam, and Sarah had what to say to Avram, and Rivka had what to say to Yitzchak, and Rachel had what to say to Yaakov. If you look throughout the Tanakh, you see that each one of them had their point in the Torah where they said something pretty sharp. And it was a matter of bringing the peace back into the home. How do you bring the peace back in when that's the focal point? When the focal point is not about who's right, but the focal point is about getting to peace. David, you're about to ask about Rivka and Yitzchak.
She only speaks to him once.
Who, Rivka and Yitzchak?
They're punished with Esau for it.
I don't know what you're referring to. But, Chazal.
Boss Chuba girl marries the Rebbe. She gets talked to him once.
I don't know that I would read it that way. Okay, so show me, we'll see. So, Hillel taught us a person has to be Ohev Shalom. Berodev Shalom, and Chazal tell us how would Aaron HaKohen chase after peace? This goes back to the point we were discussing earlier, giving a person a positive self-image. If Aaron knew someone did an Avera, so he'd come and befriend him and treat him positively. And the guy would think to himself, if Aaron knew what I just did yesterday, he'd be embarrassed to be seen in the streets with me. The Kohen Gadol is walking around with me. And then the guy would think, I don't want him to think that about me. And then he'd change his ways. Again, working through the positive. Working through the positive. You will find that you're going to walk through the door and your wife is going to say, don't be upset at me. You're going to find this sentence greeting you either in the morning or a sentence like, you know, I did a really stupid thing today. And you're thinking, okay, what'd she do? Did she give her credit card number over the phone? What'd she do? Ohev shalom v'rodev shalom. Think positive. One of the goals, maybe one of the major goals, if not the major goal, within the marriage is peace. And it's not easy. It's something that has to be chased after. Chazal say, Oseh shalom bimomavu, yaseh shalom aleinu. We ask Hashem, you make peace in the heavens, make peace down below. What does that mean? That means that even in heavens, God created a nature, a system that naturally does not have peace. By the laws of nature, there is always competition, there is always conflict. Godliness is about peace. We say, Shalom is one of Hashem's names. So we have to know, if we want the Shekhinah in our home, that's about peace. And sometimes people say, Rabbi, what tips do you have for raising children well? Raising your children to love Torah. You should know that the biggest investment in your children is the peace in your home. There's no better investment. The school you send them to is secondary. Everything else is secondary. The first point is that there be peace between the parents. Ohev et habiriyot, to love Hashem's creatures. Umkarvan la Torah, and bring them close to Torah. To love God's creatures. So I've often said that ideally your wife is your best friend, is your partner in life. But sometimes when things explode, so you should at least remember she's not less than a stranger in the street. Don't treat her less than you treat a stranger in the street. You wouldn't say a joke at a stranger's expense in front of someone else. You wouldn't quote your issues with a stranger to someone else. She's not less than anyone else. And a person is supposed to love Hashem's creatures. And within one's wife, one should first see the godliness. She is Hashem's creature. And hopefully one should also recognize that between you and her, well, that's where the Shekhinah is going to rest. So she is your potential for Shekhinah. If you want to get the Shekhinah on your own, you ain't going to do it. You can't get there. You want to get to wholeness, it's only through her. So sometimes people say, well, maybe it should have been a different her. That's question number one that plagues people for the first year or two or three of marriage, until they decide they won't let that plague them. I told this to a friend of mine. He said, that's such a funny line. Because I told the shaliach, he was in some country where they had a shaliach, I told the shaliach that after 5 years of marriage, I'm still asking myself if I married the right person. And the shaliach told me, well, after 25 years of marriage, I'm asking myself the same question. Shaliach, he was sent from Israel to help the community have Torah observance, learn about Torah. So I think that, right, you could find yourself 25 years into marriage asking yourself the same question if you don't nip it at the bud and say, this is right, let me figure out how to make it work. It's not about will it work, it's about how will it work. A person has to realize, she is your potential for Shekhinah. She is your potential for holiness. You look at her and you say, wait a second, how's that going to work? That's a good question. That's what you're going to figure out. Umkarvan la Torah. And bring them close to Torah. People often discuss having a chavrusa with their wives. You want to bring your wife close to Torah? So prepare some stories. Come to the Shabbos table with a nice Dvar Torah with a mashal. Don't try to share with her the deep, complicated Gemara you've been learning in Yeshiva. That's not for her. Maybe she wants to hear it. Some girls do. Fine, you could try to share that with her. You want to have a chavrusa with your wife on condition that you prepared in advance. You want to bring her close to Torah? Share with her things that speak to her. Try to talk to her on the issues that pertain to her. Prepare nice Divrei Torah for the table. I don't understand people who tell me, I was up all night, I don't have any strength come Shabbos. Who gave you right to enter Shabbos without any strength? So take a nap Friday morning. Who gave you a right to be up all night Thursday night learning, if that means when you have the one day a week with your family, you won't have it with your family? There was a guy who told me he spends all of Shabbos morning learning in yeshiva. That's very nice, but what about your kids? What about your wife? Learn all week in yeshiva. Shabbos, maybe you should be home. Maybe your kids should see you learn. Maybe you should learn with them. A person has a responsibility to be mekalvan la Torah, to bring them close to the Torah. You don't have to necessarily teach them Torah, but you have to make them feel close to the Torah. And the way to do that is to show them the beauty of the Torah. The beauty of the Torah is in the songs, it's in the stories, it's in the messages, to bring them close to the Torah. It's not only about what the Torah says. How many parents are telling their kids, don't turn on the light? But did they tell them the story about the donkey that kept Shabbos, the chassid who sold his donkey, and then the donkey wouldn't work on Shabbos? Maybe you should tell the kid that story and act it out. You know, when Rav Chaim of Elazhen would come home, he'd close the door behind him and get on all fours, and the kids would grab the back of his tailcoat and go giddy up, and he'd crawl on all fours around the house. The Torah is about a life. It's not just about, the laws of the Torah. We have to bring them close to the Torah. We have to make the Torah something they want to learn. I called up my son's Rebbe mid-year, and I said to him, you know, I want to understand what you expect of me. Are you expecting me to review the work with him, like when I learn with him, or you're teaching him whatever you want him to know, and whatever I do with him is fine? I'm not sure he really wants to review what he does with you in class when he's home with me. So when I actually learn with him, do I have to review what you've done in class? Are you assuming I'm doing that, or can I do other things with him that he enjoys? And the Rebbe gave me quite possibly the nicest line I could have expected. He said to me, all I want you to do when you sit with your son is to get him to love learning Torah. If you do that by telling him a story from Torah, that's fine. If you do that by reviewing what we do in class, that's also fine. Whatever he enjoys. I want him to walk away with the sessions with you with the feeling learning Torah with Abba is fun. This is what I want to do. What you do, I really don't care. So it's nice. That's a Rebbe that's responsible. He covers what he needs in class and he doesn't count on me. I appreciate that. Not every Rebbe is going to give you that answer. But the message is true. The message is very, very true. Mekarvan l'Torah. We have to bring them close to Torah. And it's not only about our kids. It's also about our spouses. How many wives? I remember one wife told me a line like this. She said, I can't even quote it. A very, very nasty comment about her husband's Torah. I can't quote it. I can't say the words.
You say B, Rabbi.
No. I thought I could. I can't say. It's Yiddish. You guys wouldn't understand it anyways. But at any rate, you'd be surprised how many wives there are out there who are like, what do I care if he learns? They get married and they think, I want him to learn. And then they come home and the product of his learning is inconveniences. We have to bring them close and we have to understand what speaks to a woman. There was one woman who said, I want all my daughters to marry people who learn Torah. Because I know people who learn Torah know how to treat their wives well, they take time to be with their wives, they help their wives, they're caring for their wives. What are we showing our wives from the Torah we learn? We have to know that this isn't only about the world outside. Mikavan Torah, bringing someone close to Torah, is about the world inside too. If a husband comes home and he's been learning all day, and now he's tired, so he needs a break. So he sits down and he opens a newspaper. So his wife is like, so that's what learning Torah is about. Why don't you come help me in the kitchen? And he's like, I've been learning all day, I need a break. A friend of mine told me he never brings a newspaper into his house. Because when he brings a newspaper into his house, then he finds himself Friday night reading the newspaper while his wife is doing dishes. So he said, by what right? She's been working all week just like I've been working all week. By what right am I sitting Friday night reading a newspaper? So he stopped bringing home, even the Bathsheba or whatever it is they put in our mailboxes. He doesn't even bring it home. He says, my responsibility is to be a mensch to my wife. So he's a big Talmud Chacham. I don't know that he could share with his wife anything he learns during the week. I mean, he's a guy, I don't know how many times he finishes Shas in a year. He's like, he's high up there. But he's caring. And his wife sees that the Torah trains him to be a fine person. Mekarvan l'Torah. Bringing them close. It's not only about the knowledge. It's about the attitude. Hu haya omer, Hillel used to say, Negad Shma, persons whose name has become famous, Avad Shmei. So it's going to be quick to pass. Those things don't last. And I would say the same thing in the house too. Like one question I got a few weeks ago was, how do you get your wife to respect you? You want to know how you get your wife to respect you? Treat her like a queen. That's what it says in the Rambam. Give her respect. Treat her with dignity. Treat her and value her. Your wife is always a reflection of you. Whatever you show her, that's what she'll show you. If you're busy showing her how she's not up to par with the mitzvos and you are, so don't worry, she'll show you how you aren't. It goes both ways. But if you're there and you're showing her how great she is and how much you value her and you look at her strengths and you value them, then she'll respect who you are. Udilo mosif, and whoever does not add on to his learning, yosef, it's going to pass. And this is one of the challenges of married life. How do you add to your learning when the nature of married life is that it only takes away from learning? So that's a challenge. Each person has to figure out their own formula. One of the tricks, if you could do it, is to make a chavrusa with your father-in-law or your brother-in-law or someone in her family. Because then she'll be more happy every time you learn. It's the nature of the human being. Udilo yalif, and whoever never learned anything, talachayav, technically deserves a death penalty. What's his life like? What kind of life is he leading if he never learned anything? Udishtamish b'tagah, and whoever uses the crown of Torah, chalaf, he's going to pass from the world, it's not going to work. Don't expect your wives to respect the Torah you learn, or to respect you for the Torah you know. When I got engaged, sort of Pesen Zatzal told me, they don't make them like they used to. So I'm standing there, okay. He says, they don't make them like they used to. I'm telling you, they just don't make them like they used to. They don't make the Talmidei Chachamim like they used to. They don't make us men like they used to. Once upon a time, us men used to learn Torah for the sake of Torah. And then our wives could respect that. But we're not on that level anymore. And our wives see that. There's our ego mixed into our learning. And a wife could devote herself and dedicate herself to her husband's Torah when it was real Torah, when it was about God. But when we're on the level that our Torah is about ourselves, so a wife has a hard time dedicating herself to her husband's ego. She senses that. So they don't make them like they used to. We're not like we used to, we should be, and that's why our wives, they're a reflection of who we are. So people sometimes think it's the honor of Torah. There's a famous story about a couple that came to the Rosh Yeshiva. And the husband said, my wife wants me to take out the garbage. And I say, you know, I learned Torah. I'm a Talmud Chacham. It's not the honor of Torah that I should be walking out the public street with a bag of garbage. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, what time are we talking about every morning? So he says, every morning at 8 o'clock. She wants me to take out the garbage. When everyone's all out, I'm going to carry the garbage. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, you're right. That's not the respect. You at 8 o'clock, you should not be going out with the garbage. And the next morning at 8 o'clock, there's a knock on the door and the Rosh Yeshiva is standing there and he says, can I please have the garbage? We think we're honoring Torah. We think it's about the Torah. It's not. And Chazal warned us, he who tries to use the crown of Torah is going to pass from the world. And in our day and age, we don't begin to have that concept. We don't live up to it. That doesn't mean that if you're the guy who's learning Torah, you should be the family joke or you should let everyone put you down. I'm not saying the other extreme either. But a person shouldn't think that it's the crown of Torah. We don't use the crown of Torah, or at least we try not to. Hu haya omer, Hillel used to teach us balance in life. Im ein ani li, if I don't fend for myself, mi li, who's going to fend for me? Ukshani latzmi, if I fend only for myself, mani, what am I worth? Vim lo achshav ematayin, if not now, then when? So I never understood this last line in the Mishnah till last year. When I sat with a group of youngsters, I don't want to say what country they were from, and they all had no connection whatsoever to Torah. We were learning Pirkei Avos, we were learning Torah, and none of it spoke to them. So at some point I asked them, what do you guys want to accomplish in life? So all of them said they want to be millionaires. They're from a country where there's a huge stress on money, bigger than the United States, believe it or not. And I noticed this about a lot of people from that country. That's why I don't want to say what country it is. So I said, none of you have any concept of doing kindness with humanity, of anything positive towards other people? So they all said, yeah, when we have our millions, we'll give to the Red Cross, and we'll give to Israel bonds, and we'll do positive things. So I said, well, you're talking to me, you'll only start being a nice person in 20 years from now? That's this Mishnah. People are kidding themselves. They figure right now I could be anili, focused about themselves. Eventually I'll do for others. That's why the Mishnah says, Im lach shavei masai. If not now, then when? At every stage in our life, we have to keep this balance. That I need to fend for myself, but not only for myself. Now that's one understanding in the Mishnah. It's interesting that Rashi and the Rambam, they don't understand the Mishnah this way. They understand the Mishnah, imein anili, if I don't worry about making myself a better person. It's not about fending for myself. It's about who's going to take care of me being a good person. Mili, who's going to take care of me being a better person? I'm in control of myself. Uchshani la'atzmi, and when I look at myself, so then mani, I'm not whole. And this is maybe one of the best formulas for peace in the marriage. The real source of most conflict is that we see what our spouse did wrong. It's criticism. That's the real source of most conflict in a marriage. And if a person only looks at this Mishnah and says, wait a second, ma'ani, what have I amounted to? If a person is honest with himself, he'll see that he still has a lot of work to do himself. We're not perfect. And so before I look at my spouse's imperfections, let me look at myself. And if I'm honest with myself, so I got so much work to do, how could I look at someone else and criticize? The reason I've pushed off almost a half a year now, until this class, we never discussed how to give criticism. Because you have to know that the glue of marriage is compliments. And the breakup of marriage, the thing that puts distance between us, is criticism. And it doesn't matter how correct your criticism is. You could be 100% correct. At the end of the day, criticism is saying, to criticize you was more important to me than your feelings. To criticize you, the fact that I'm right, that was more important to me than hurting your feelings. And you could sit here from today until tomorrow explaining why it's logical and it's right and you shouldn't be hurt by it. But at the end of the day, we all are. So Hillel reminds us, Uchshani la'atzmi, if I only look at myself, mani, what have I amounted to? There's so much work left to do. And if I don't focus on it now, when am I ever going to become a better person? So this Mishnah is really a Mishnah that a person has to think about, like the Rambam, like Rashi. A person has to think about any time he's going to criticize anyone, but all the more so within a marriage. So what do we learn today? We learned that Hillel and Shammai were disciples of Shemaiah and Avtalion. Hillel lived 100 years before the destruction of the temple. Hillel and Shammai only argued on how many points?
Three.
Hillel taught us, Hillel came from which country? From Babylon. Hillel HaBavli, Gadol mi Rabban, Shmo. Even bigger than being called Rabban is being known by their own name. Hillel taught us that one should be a disciple of Aaron. We discussed the importance of framing ourselves. We discussed the importance of identifying as I am the disciple of. We discussed the importance of giving a person a positive self-image, be it our children, be it our spouse. Ohev shalom v'rodef shalom. We discussed the importance of loving peace, chasing after peace. The focus is peace. It's not just about the truth, it's more about peace. We discussed that peace is something that requires initiative. It doesn't come on its own, but quite the contrary. The nature of things is that there will be conflict. Peace is something that requires work. We discussed Ohev Tabriot, loving God's creatures for the fact that they are God's creatures, and we discussed the concept of Mikalvan LeTorah, to bring people close to Torah, preparing Divrei Torah for the home, preparing ourselves for a beautiful Shabbos. We quoted the Mishnah about a person who becomes famous, it will pass. A person doesn't add on to his learning, that's a challenge in marriage, will pass. And using the crown of Torah in our state today, that we don't even have the crown of Torah, we're only focused about our own crown. We discussed the Mishnah, Imeina Nili Mili, the balance that a person has to fend for himself, but also be focused on giving others, and that this has to be at every stage of a person's growth. There's no stage where a person should only be focused about himself. And we discussed Maimonides' understanding of this Mishnah, that this is about, if I don't fix myself, who will? And the truth is that this can also be applied to the home. Very often husbands have all kinds of aspirations about how holy their house should be. And we should know that the holiness in the house revolves around you. Don't walk around with expectations from your spouse. see what you can do in the home. So you'll say, but I wanted a house where there's no yelling and my wife doesn't stop yelling. Okay, so you be the opposite. You balance it out. You can always be the balancing factor. Im eina nili mili. If I don't take care of this home to be the way I want, who's going to do it? It's not only about me, it's also about my home. A person shouldn't look outside and look at his wife and say, well, why don't you do A, B, and C, and D? Chazal said, you want Shabbos on time in your home, you prepare for it. The Gemara brought a bunch of stories about different rabbis. Each one used to do his job, cutting the wood, cutting the salad. The Gemara gives us a whole list of stories, each rabbi, what they did in their home. And the halacha says in Shulchan Aruch, you be home early so that you can help prepare for Shabbos on time. Because otherwise, chances are Shabbos is not going to be there on time. So, if I don't worry about it myself, who's going to do it? Ah, my wife. Chazal said, no, you do it. You take care of it. So obviously that has its limits. You know, a guy could say, I'm never going to leave the house if I'm going to do everything my wife's supposed to do. But okay, there's the balance, right? And here the Mishnah is reminding us that a lot of that balance is on your shoulders.